Chairman, distinguished guests on the dais, Reverend Fathers, boys and girls. My God, what a healthy looking bunch. You know, I have never seen such a well-fed bunch in my entire years in AA. And it does my heart good to see that we're all doing so well during such a trying time. I'd like to paint you a few word pictures, if I may, about Bill G., the alcoholic. And let me see, they gave me 2 hours. Well, I usually take longer than that. Isn't that a nice thought? How are you going to get out? But tonight I'll confine my remarks to Bill G., the alcoholic, and then I'd like to tell you a little bit about the romance of recovery in AA. Anything that I might say during the course of my allotted time is just my opinion. It doesn't reflect AA as a whole or this glorious convention or anybody individually. It's just the way AA affects me. I like to remember the halcyon days of my youth. I have a very retentive memory. I like to remember Saturday night somehow or another. You know, Saturday night when I was a boy, my God, that is a long time ago, was a big night in our town. I used to have one, maybe two. Oh, I was a tremendous success. Everybody loved me, and I loved everyone. And I'd look in the mirror, and I'd say, "Oh, Bill, you're adorable." Isn't that a terrible way to begin life as a young drinker? And a little bit at a time, it seems, I'd have a little drink on Friday night. Not many. You see, I never drank much, just a little bit at a time. I'd have one, I'd have two, I'd have three. And I remember Thursday. Why do I remember Thursday? I'll tell you why. I've been in the retail furniture business for over 50 years. And Thursday business is always bad. Consequently, we had one or two Thursday to console ourselves. And Wednesday, as I recall, this guy's going to go on all night. He'll never get to it. We had such a tremendous day that we had one or two or three or four or five or six or seven to celebrate. And believe it or not, I woke up one morning and discovered I'm drinking all the time. Now what causes this? I'm stupid. Well, it's stupid. I never drank much. I had a partner in those early years when I was 18. A Jewish fellow. I'm an Irishman. My mother's a Limerick woman. Born and raised in Limerick City. I was talking to a fellow here that knew the potters there. Oh, yeah, courier drives the bus to the airport. The Potter Tavern is still there. So you see, I had a reason to drink a little bit at a time. And this fella, this partner of mine, didn't drink at all. But he didn't object because we managed to make money. And money seems to be the thing, then as now. The bottom line is what we pay off on. Huh? He would look askance and mumble under his breath, and I'd say, Bernie, are you bothered? I ain't bothered, but I ain't happy. As business picked up, my drinking picked up. I became more two-fisted in my approach to alcohol. I woke up one morning and discovered I was married to a miserable woman. Why don't you be a man and drink like Charlie? Do you know Charlie? I know Charlie. He's the fellow that says, why don't you and Wilma come over tonight and we'll have a rubbery bridge? Auction bridge in those years, you know. A more stupid game was never conceived. And I would beg off and say, no. Well, we said, it's all arranged. We would arrive at Charlie's nine-ish. The table was set, the cards were laid out. There on the table sat a moldy martini. Circa 1920, 21, 22. Be very careful with it, because that's the only one you'd get that night. I avoided that bum with the tenacity of a bulldog. My drinking is now stepped up in tempo. We bought the building. We expanded. I began to admire myself even more in the mirror. How could such a lovely creature not be a success? By God, God's gift to the furniture business. I am now taking, in those years, I don't see anybody out here old enough to remember this brand. I used to drink all over Holt's bonded rye. And I brought a pint into the store in the morning to put in my desk in case someone fell down. My partner looked at me and he became very suspicious of me. And about this time I had discovered he had a little habit unbeknownst to me. He played the horses. Now, can you conceive a combination such as that? A drinking Irishman? A Jewish horse player? How in heaven's name we made any money, I don't know. He had something open on his desk this morning called a scratch sheet. Lines of figures and fractions and multiplications. What is this thing here? Why, he says, I'm figuring out a four-horse parlay. In all the years that I knew him, he never cashed a bet. I became equally suspicious of him. I wasn't having much fun because it seems as about this time, I'd only been drinking a few short years, I developed a nasty little habit. It seemed to me that I had to throw up in the morning. Does that ring a bell anywhere out here? Until this time I ran into a bartender, a friend of mine. God rest his soul. He said, "Bill, what's your trouble?" I said, "Harry, I'm as sick as a dog." Well, he said, "You're not shaking." I said, "No, but I shake inside." Well, he said, "You poor kid. Baby boy, let me fix you something." This is his panacea. It's a drop of a vitamin A, a jigger of gin, a dash of orange bitters. Voila. I said, "Make me one." He says, "I will." Well, I said, "Hurry." He says, "I am." I had one. I had two. I had three. How right he was. I floated into the store at 11 that morning. "Where have you been?" I said, "Don't bother me, boy." My partner and I entered the disenchantment stage. My wife, she's killing me. My children ignore me. I'm a pariah in my own house. "You're hiding the stuff," I say. She said, "I'm not hiding it." Well, I said, "What is it doing in the bathtub?" Bathtubs in those days were up on legs, you know. She put it under the stuff. She's, "Because you're drinking too darn much." She's, "You're going to throw away everything you've worked for. You're working 20 hours a day. Have you no brains?" I said, "Madam, you nauseate me." "Do I touch anybody here?" A fella told me this afternoon he was thinking of moving 500 miles away where no one knows him. I thought of that. And I put the action to the thought. I silently and secretly, unbeknownst to my family, liquidated our business. I didn't tell my child bride that I was leaving. I loaded up the back of my Kissel Speedster. Anybody remember that boat? And off I go 500 miles away. Now you folks that are thinking about making such a move, may I offer a word of caution? The same bunch that think that you're a dirty, stinking, drunken bum right here in London, you get up around Montreal someplace, and the same guy's waiting for you. He may speak French, but he's right there waiting for you. I thought I would go west. I managed to get a cabin every night. They didn't have motels in those years, but they had cabins. They were $1 a night, these cabins. And I always insisted on a cabin with twin beds. One to sleep in and one to throw up in. See, I was the high type. You don't need a formal education to drink like that. I ended up in Seattle, Washington. I opened up a furniture store. But it seems that my drinking is interfering with my working. I'm buying and selling furniture before any of it's paid for. Very serious business. I mean, the law frowns on this practice. To make a long story even longer, in 20 months I was a bankrupt. And all of Daddy's money went down the drain, too. As soon as I went broke, I thought of my dear wife. I knew she needed me. I sent her a telegram, collect. She wouldn't pay for it. I began the long trek back to New Jersey, which is my home state. I went for the way of San Diego. It took me 9 months to get back to Newark. En route, I'd had a discussion with a couple of greyhounds. I arrived in a thin Oldsmobile. No baggage, no clothes, no radio in the car, no spare tire, no jack, just a thin Oldsmobile. For which I received a magnificent sum of $50, which I promptly spent on booze. I wondered what was going to become of me. I couldn't go home. I called. I'm sorry, but this line has been disconnected. I was concerned. I ended up in a place called Lincoln Park. Lincoln Park, to the uninitiated, is the south end of a northbound horse. I sold my good suit that I was wearing, and in return I received a pair of blue dungarees with very little fanny in them, and a blue shirt. And I went back to Lincoln Park to polish off the suit. And I see all these fellas lying there in the grass in various stages of inebriation. And I knew I was home. It seems there's more bums congregated there than anywhere else. Incidentally, I'm not suggesting that you descend to this strata of society before you grasp AA. But sure as God made little apples on big trees, if you don't do something about your drinking, you'll end up there. And I felt sorry for old Bill. And it's November, and I'm cold. And I'm sitting there on this bench crying softly to myself when along comes another bum. Hello, Slim. I tell you, hello. This is the first guy who's spoken to me in 3 weeks. Say, says, that's a nice pair of shoes you're wearing there. Now there's a fella that knew class when he saw it. I warmed up to him right away. I told him those were Stacy Adams. I don't care where you stole them. He said, that's enough. Says, let Stacy buy another. He said, I know where we can get 75 cents for those shoes. Is that so? I said, yes. He said, let's go, I said. We go about 6 or 8 blocks away, and we came to a place called Cheap Charlie's. Appropriately named. And sure enough, he gave me 75 cents for the shoes, and because it was cold and beginning to snow, he gave me a pair of canvas relievers. I mean, this kid was all heart. Right next door to Cheap Charlie's, there happened to be a gin mill. Sheer coincidence, I'm sure. And what do you think they had on sale that day? 2 bottles of Muscatel that had never seen a grape, believe you me, Bill. For how much? 75 cents. What a stroke of luck. Right next to the gin mill is a convenient alley, and me being the host, I ushered my new found. We uncorked the jug. He took a big drink and he put his arms around. I took a big drink and I put my arms around. And I want to tell you, boys and girls, there's no love like one drunken bum for another. Back to the park we go. He's telling me of his vast conquest in the field of chemistry. I was amazed. In turn, I told him of my chain of furniture stores. Non-existent, of course. I was designing a new front for my latest venture. I turned around for his approval. The bum is gone. He took the full bottle with him. Now I'm not only broke and sick, but I'm barefooted. What does one do then? Along comes another bum. Again, I repeat, in that strata of society, there's no shortage of companionship. He said, say, kid, you and I go down and see Sally. I said, I don't know the lady. I have no money. I mean, no, he says, I mean the Salvation Army. I said, what for? All they ever do is come around to the house and collect stuff. He says, listen, it's snowing and we're going to get pneumonia staying out here. Let's get in out of the weather. He says, in your condition, they've got to give us a place to sleep. By golly, he knew what he was talking about. Fella looked us all over. He says, where's your shoes, fella? I said, somebody stole them. said, what are you crying for? I said, I'm cold. Because you're dirty too and you stink, both of you. I'm sorry, Commander.
No, he said, I'm not the commander, I'm the night clerk.
I said, all right, Sergeant. I want to get in somehow.
He said, well, you're going to take a shower first.
He gave us a piece of burlap, brown burlap bag. Never seen the soft soap you girls used. And he broke a cake of yellow soap. I don't see anybody here that would remember this old yellow soap. Ofeld's naphtha. It literally would take the hide off an ox. And he ushered us into this dank, damp shower room. Now scrub up and snap it up. Very gingerly, I tossed a little water here and there. Out we go into the, well, this is a room a third the size of this. And he gave us a blanket. It looked like a horse blanket to me. And he opened this door, and there's 200 men in there sleeping on these old Helen Gould cots, these World War I Army cots. Now he says, get into that kip and dummy up. I didn't understand his lingo at the time, but I learned quick. And we got in there. I knew I would not live through the night. The rumblings and rantings and roarings that were going on around me would drive a monk up the wall. I must have fallen asleep. I hear a shrill whistle and a bell rings and this voice says, everybody yelp. They had a big clock on the wall that said 5 a.m. I said, "Four, it's dark out." He said, "Shut up. Are you the two new fish that came in last night?" He looked me up and down. He said, "Do you want to work?" Well, I said, "I'm not a well man." I looked on his cap that said, "Envoy." I said, "Envoy, sir, I'm not a well man." Well, he says, "Then get out." I walked over to the window and I looked out. The snow outside was hip deep to a tall Indian. I hastily reconsidered. I said, "Does this job pay any money, envoy, sir?" He says, "Yes. Rather magnificent sum. First week, 95 cents. And of course, you're room and board." Well, I said, "I'll take it, but I don't have any shoes. I'll get you a pair." I wore nines, he gave me 11. He put paper in the toe. He introduced me to the mysteries of the bailing. A bailing room is a room the size of this. And in the center of the room stood this huge steel press, surrounded by acres and acres and acres of newsprint. It was a very difficult job. You had to bend over and pick the paper up and put it in this giant thing. And after it was all piled up, a fella came over and wrapped some wire around it, stepped on a treadle that disgorged this mass, and you began all over again. Now let me tell you something about the alcoholic and the stages of recovery. I bailed more paper there, and the records are there to show, than has ever been bailed before or since, and right away I'm looking for a promotion. I said, say, envoy, don't you have a better job around here for a bright boy?
Well, he said, this was Friday. They paid there on Friday. He said, you show up Monday and we'll see. See, Friday is the kiss-off day in Salvation Army. They all take their money and go out and get drunk, and then a new batch comes in Sunday. And so Monday, I'm right on the job. Here I am, sir. Well, he said, I'm glad to see that, Bill, little boy. I'm going to put you out on the truck as a helper at $3 a week, two bologna sandwiches, a cold container of coffee. Well, things are looking up for old Willie. And that Monday, we went out into the hinterlands, into the oranges and Caldwell. And all that week, I'm running in and out of the yard, and my little skinny legs and the dogs are snapping at my delicate fanny. And I'm watching the fellow that drives this thing. And I'd come out with a beautiful coat, and the fellow says, the driver says, I'll take that right up here, Bill.
And what's that?
Yes, just put it right here.
Oh, I see.
Oh, well, the light is beginning to dawn. Friday night, I took my $3, I buddied up to him, I took the driver out and got him drunk. Monday, I got his job. After all, I was the executive type. $5 a week. They took me out of the big dormitory and they put me in a tiny little room. I had absolute privacy. There was only six. They gave me a cap that said chauffeur on it. No one would have known. And so Monday, here's old Bill out behind the old rig. One of the boys came out, I'll never forget this, believe me, with a size 46 silk gabardine suit. I looked at the label and said, "53." I said, I'll take it up here, sir. I was a very modest 38. I could hardly contain myself until I got back to my room to try on the suit. Trousers came up to here. The cuffs came down to here. Well, I thought with a little fixing thing. How stupid can one get? Friday night came. I grabbed my $5. I got in my big suit. And I went out and got drunk and they threw me out of there. I couldn't stand prosperity. Funny, you say? Tragedy in its worst and most virulent. Tragedy to the nth degree. Because here began the degradation of misery. I became a bum, literally, physically, spiritually, morally, and every other way. I'd go from Stoder's store and bum nickels and dimes. And when I got so filthy I couldn't go in the stores anymore, I'd stand at the bus stop with two pennies in my hand and I'd say to the old lady, my mother, she's just ready to pass on to St. Michael's. Gives me a penny case so I can go up and see her, the dear soul, before she departs this life. When you got five pennies together, you were the fifth of a cheap mix. I don't know how many of you have had to drink denatured alcohol to get a jar. I don't know how many of you have mixed it up with water and shake it up until it looks like milk.
And we're sitting in the park, shaking it up, and the old lady comes by and says, "Oh, good boy, drinking your milk. Here's a quarter, go get another bottle." And a quart can lay out 5 guys for 48 hours. And if you wake up in the morning and one of them happens to be cold and stiff, the first law of the jungle is, take his shoes. Is this the way for a human being to live, that our blessed Lord is endowed with life and breath to live and breathe? Is this the way a normal person reacts when he's faced with such adversity? Oh, it's not. I was a dirty, filthy, slimy thing that crept out from under a flat rock just to get a brief glimpse of sunlight and then back in. I made the rounds of the hospitals. I discovered that formaldehyde is better than booze, more potent. And if you didn't make the rounds too often, as the fellow said, "William, my lad, you've got to become a circle bum. Nobody is just a Newark stiff. You become a circle bum, and you learn to talk the way they talk in the jungle. And you go from Newark to Patterson to Hackensack to Little Ferry to Jersey City, and then the big jump across the meadows, and it takes about 30 days to make this circle. And this particular time, as I recall, I ended up in Jersey City in the medical center. It was a brand new building then. And I was under what is charitably called restraining sheets. That's a fancy name for straitjackets, you know. You had to give your next of kin to get in. And they called up my little darling. And I think she came down to identify the body. Hopefully, I'm sure. And you know, God in his infinite wisdom did something exceptionally fine and good when he gave a gal like mine to a bum like me. She came down, no harsh words. "Hello, Bill." "Ma, they robbed me. I've been a bad boy." I said, "This big fella, he's mean to me." He says, "If you don't shut your big mouth, I'm going to put this gag right back in there." They had a rubber truncheon sort of a thing with a strap on the end of it, about 6 inches long and about 3 inches around, and they'd grab you by the nostrils and you'd open your mouth for air and they'd jam it down in there and tie it behind your head. And if you didn't swallow your tongue, you'd survive. And if you didn't survive, throw him out in the cooler there, and somebody will claim him, or they'll throw you to Potter's Field. And this big fella said to her, "Would you let him try AA, Mrs. Green?" She said, "Would you try AA, Bill?" This is November again, 1939. "Yes," I said, "take me home. I'm afraid here." She says, "We have no home. We have have a basement apartment on High Street. She said, but you can come there and live if you behave yourself. Will you go to the AA meeting? I didn't know AA from Adams or Fox. She bought me a $15 suit. My lady is a gentlewoman. She plays the piano. She's a wonderful cook, a grand lover, a wonderful mother. I said, yes, I'll go. Well, she said, I'm glad you're showing some intelligence. The meeting was on Wednesday night. The old Hello McHugh Studios in West Washington Street. Bill W. had been there on several occasions. Unbeknownst to me, of course, because I didn't know who he was. And she stuck a buck in my pocket. Hard-earned dollar. She was a waitress in a crummy diner down on Park Place to support my daughter and herself. I guess I'll go. She said, do you think I should go with you? No, I said, I don't think so. I said, I'll be all right. She said, how's your stomach? I said, it's sore and raw, but I think I'm going to be all right. Not once has she questioned where I've been during the 3 years that she hadn't seen me. Not once. And I went to the meeting, and I walked up those three flights of stairs. I got a nosebleed getting up there. I said, what the hell? What is going on? And there on the dais in front of the lectern stood a man talking about the grace of God. I fingered the buck. I tiptoed gently down the stairs. There were 15 people in the audience. Again, I fingered the buck. No. Somewhere in the back of my noggin told me that if I had a drink and went home, I would sleep on the sidewalk again that night. It's very cold in New Jersey in November. Extremely cold, wet cold, biting cold that chews you inside and makes your bones ache. So I went home, but on the way home, I was thinking, what sort of a story can I cook up? See, I've no thought of stopping drinking. I just want to figure out a way to drink a little bit without getting caught. After all, she was working, the apartment was nice and warm. I mean, what's wrong with that? I was too lazy to work, not smart enough to be crooked. So I went in the apartment and I kissed her, and she said, oh, you're home early. I said, I've been gone about an hour. I said, yes, it was a rather short meeting tonight. I said, but I enjoyed it. Well, she said, tell me about it. I said, I will. I said, they had some people there in the audience sitting on these nice chairs. And they had a dais and a lectern, and the fellow was talking. I said, right next to the dais, they had a little table. She said, yeah, what for? Well, I said, on the little table, you know, they had a bowl of cracked ice. And they had a bottle of rye. And a bottle of bourbon and some gin, too. He said, I don't understand it. What's that for? Oh, I said, they just put that there to test you. See, already I'm figuring how I can figure out of this mess. He said, well, I don't understand it. Well, I said, you never did, so why talk to you about it? I mean, in the meantime, she's working her little legs off in this diner, and my daughter wants to get me out of the house. Throw this bum out. Next Wednesday rolls around, she gives me another buck. Now I got two. The story is set up. The stage is all prepared. The $15 suit in the Max Long Bar. I'll have a little old River Holt and play water ballin', please. Because we don't have any, but we have a little Canadian club. Why, that'll do. Hello, boys. I had one. Oh, and that good booze, it burned in my belly. Believe me, the elixir of life. Oh, it was so good, and I was so smart. I looked in the mirror behind the bar, and I said, oh, Bill, you're a crafty rascal. I looked at the clock. I'd been gone about an hour and a half. I'll see you, boys. I picked up the change. And I went home. She opened the door. My darling is a little girl. She's only 5'1". And I bent down and kissed her. She said, oh, no, Bill, I smell booze. I said, you see, dear, you're not listening. Do you remember the little table? The fat guys, do you remember that? Vaguely, well, I said, I've just been testing. Huh? It seems that I had to cook up a special meeting for Friday night. I got the old itch there, and this was for somebody's birthday or something or other. I cooked up some cockamamie story, and she gave me a couple of bucks, and off I go. I came back at 2 o'clock in the morning, one shoe, no coat, drunk as a skunk, pounding on the door to get in, demanding my marital rights. I couldn't hit a bull in a can with a handful of tacks. She opened the door and I fell in. I'm lying there looking up at her. She said, what happened to you? You didn't go to the meeting. And I picked myself up and drew myself up to my full height and looked down at her and said, madam, they put me to the test and I failed. To tell you that I slept on the sidewalk that night, do I?
Well, I'm not going to take you down the long primrose path any further. I'd like to spend a few more moments, if I may, and tell you a little bit about the romance of recovery in AA. It's my version, my story. It's the way it works for me. Some 5 years have passed since I've been thrown out of the house. I'd wormed my way back into the Hacienda Green on some pretext or another. And I was lying on the floor of our living room, sans clothes, The windows had all been nailed shut. My clothes were securely under lock and key. See, when you live in the basement, that means that the street is right out there at your window level. And with a pair of shorts, I could be the grand old man of track, you know. And I'm lying there in a pool of goo. When I would stop drinking after being on these 3 and 4 week bouts, I would bleed from the ears and from the eyes, from the nose. You have a mild hemorrhage, you're breaking these little vessels. And I see that I'm all bloody. And I said, get the priest. He said, shut up, you wake the neighbors. I said, I'm dying, Ma. She said, if you don't be quiet, you're going to die on the sidewalk. I said, I'd like to try AA again. What? You mean that testing dip? No. I said, and this time I'll take you. What a lovely woman. God bless her sweet soul. Well, she said, you can't go anywhere in this condition. You can't see anybody like this. I said, I'll tell you what to do. Get a hold of Dr. Lubin. He lived in the same apartment. Dr. Lubin had a magic potion for $5 that would put a corpse on his feet. A filthy, vulgar little man with dirty fingernails and unkempt hair. Always picking his teeth from an onion and cheese sandwich. Oh, hold on again. There he is. He did it again, huh? You got the five? First to five. I mean, nothing happened. Yes, here's $5. Yeah. Try it again. He reaches for some meat somewhere on my skinny carcass. And he zings me with a needle that's blunter than most gavels, if you have it with me. I fly up from the floor. My darling washes my crummy carcass. He said, do you think you can try? I had a beard that was a year old, scraggly and unkempt and matted. And she washed it and combed it and took my clothes out of the closet. We had no phone because with a phone I could get food. And across the street we go to the drugstore. She looked up AA in the phone book, Al-Anon. She put the nickel in the box, dialed the number. I wasn't permitted to have money in those years. She handed me the phone, and here's the conversation. Al-Anon Club, Louis speaking. I said, Louis, this is Mr. G. Well, he says, what the hell do you think of that? Tell me more. I said, I'm BG. So where are you, BG? I said, I'm not gonna tell you. I said, my wife is right here.
Oh, he says, you're a married fellow.
I guess I'm not working at it too strenuously now. This is a Sunday night. I said, tell me what to do. Well, he said, can you come up to the club? I said, you fellows are open tonight? He said, yeah. Well, tell me where it is. Well, I said, it's at 7th Avenue and 7th Street. Oh, no, those are the athletic club, I said. He said, yes, I've been thrown out of there many times. He's good. We got on the bus and up we go. The ladies of Al-Anon, it wasn't Al-Anon, they didn't have any, but the ladies in AA then, as we walked up those 13 steps to that old brownstone mausoleum, they took my child bride in their arms and took her off into a little room to tell her the facts of life. Their vision, not mine. And standing in front of me is this huge man, smoking this evil-smelling pipe. If I would have been sober, he would have asphyxiated me right then and there. He says, hiya, boy, my name is Charlie. I said, you get away from me, I want to see Louie. He says, I want you to meet Joe, a tremendous man who's built like our little AA pins that a lot of us in the States wear. Seems he was a greenskeeper at a golf course. Healthiest looking bird I'd ever seen. What's your name, boy? I said, Bill Green. Oh, that's all right. I said, that's my name, you dummy. Now he says, don't get smart. I said, look, Joe, I want to see Louie, please. He said, do you always wear a beard? I know. They take me into a little office. Here sits an anemic little man, 5 foot tall, he couldn't have weighed 80 pounds. I said, you're Louie? He says, yes. I said, by God, you need a drink. Oh, this was the wrong thing to say. Oh, this was dynamite. I lit the fuse right there. Charlie grabbed me by the front of the shirt and says, you big bum, you're not funny. I ought to belt you. Well, I feared for the safety of the old Bill carcass. I said, look, I'm sorry, I apologize. I said, look, Lou, old friend, just give me the pills. I'm not dressed for this. I said, I said, B.G., the fellow with the pills won't be here tonight. Take him in and give him some coffee. In we go. Meet Harry. Oh, Harry, Harry's wife. Oh, I said, you're a big one, my wife. Shut up. I said, my wife, shut up. I want you to meet Al. He's a beer sip. Don't say another word or I'll let you. Drink the coffee. AA coffee in those years has left something to be desired. It was dishwater, but hot. Drink it.
Fellas, I'd like to tell you a little. Don't say a word. Listen, you dummy. I said, but I said, a bell rings. I think the joint's on fire. I leap from the stool. My wife, oh, shut up. The romance of recovery in AA. There's a meeting starting upstairs. Oh, I said, for me. No, just the regular Sunday night meeting, but you're going. Charlie on one side and Joe on the other. The way they hung on to me, I must have been the only schnook they had in that joint the year. And in those years, they didn't trust us too much. This is what this like. The girls were on one side and the fellows were on the other. We're right up in the second row front. Joe's here, old Dad is here, and there's Charlie. I look over at my bride and I wave. She looks over at me and she waves back. I guess the girls had told her a few things during my absence. Nothing very complimentary to the great man himself. I said to Joe, I said, Joe, do you have chagrin? He says, I don't smoke. 60,000 people in AA at this time. I'm between the only two stiffs that don't use cigarettes. God, I felt sorry for me. And I looked on the floor, and there was a big, long butt. I'm no fried. I gently, with my toe, eased it towards me. I reach down very cautiously to pick it up, and Charlie steps on my hand. Says, we don't do those kind of things in here, B.G. One more stunt like that, he says, I'm going to butt you right in the mouth. I says, I'm sorry. Shut up. I'll never forget this meeting if I live to be 1,000. And I have every intention of doing so. In those years, they had a leader. They had speaker number one, speaker number two, and the big gun of the night, speaker number three. Of course, this I didn't know at the time. And they called on the first speaker. This guy, he took us all the way back to the Boer War. He took us right up to the White Cliffs of Dover. I said, will you tell me what this has got to do with me? And he gave me a belt and a whip and said, shut up. He talked for an hour. because the meeting started at 8 o'clock and went on and on and on ad infinite. I turned to Joe. I said, Joe, I have to go.
He said, you'll have to go here. Yep, right here. I said, shall I? I said, will you give me a drag on the pipe at least? I'll give you a punch in the mouth. I didn't care for him at all. The romance of recovery. They called on the second speaker, a tiny little man. He had a tiny little wife and three tiny children. He told the most poignant story I'd ever heard in my entire lifetime. It seems it was Thanksgiving time. He just purchased a new electric range for his wife. Thanksgiving dinner was simmering on the rear of the range. One of his cronies went around the front and rang the bell. And when his little darling went to answer the front door, he and three other guys took stove, dinner, and all right out the back door. I like that fella. I looked over at my bride and I said, I never did anything like that, man. We never had a stove that was worth a dime. They passed the basket. I had nothing that remotely resembled money. I go. What is all this bone? Go shut up. Oh, there must be $3 in there. Oh, I wanted to get my hands on it. Then they called on what turned out to be the final speaker of the evening. A man by the name of Stoney, that was his nickname. God rest his soul, he did much for me. Stoney had a penchant for diamonds unlike no other man in this entire world. He had a diamond horseshoe on his shirt front. No tie, but a diamond horseshoe. He had a 4-carat pinky ring on his finger that he blew on constantly. He admired it at great length. He had a Ronson cigarette lighter that was diamond studded. He had 5 1-carat stones embedded in the side. And he's talking. And he's flipping this lighter and he's looking right at me. He says, if you're sick and broken, don't have a job tonight, don't let it bother you. If I'd have had a gun, I'd have shot him right between the eyes. Finally, the meeting was over. They took me downstairs and I threw up all that coffee. Fellas, I'll see you next week. No, come back up and meet the speakers. Yes, it's very much, yes. No, I don't wear a beard. No, my wife is. No, I don't wear a beard. My first meeting, yes. Would you care for a tuna fish sandwich? No. Ma! Ma! Oh,
yes, yes. Do you have a sir? Carol said to my wife, don't let him smoke, forms gas. Oh, gross. Yes, ma'am. Yes, it's very nice. Give him the pamphlets. Buy him the book. The book in those years was $3. Make him read it tonight. I can barely walk and they want me to read a book. Tom says, don't worry, kid. You'll make it. And he went out and got in his Cadillac and went that way. Stoney said, boy, I expect a lot out of you. See you next week. He went out and got in another Cadillac and went the other way. Funny, isn't it, huh? Tragedy. My little darling and I, with the pamphlets and the book, we went out and got on the bus and went the other way. I had one lucid thought. God in his wisdom, let me return to the rug. Let me get in that house and get back on that rug. We get in the house and I take off my jacket. Put that jacket on. I said, what for? We're home now. Makes no difference. I said, what are you going to do, dear? Just what the girls told me to do. Make a nice pot of coffee. All night long I sit there. I'm reading a little, I'm drinking a little, and I puke a lot, I'll tell you about that. Not very nice words to use at a convention, but that's the truth of the matter. Dawn broke. I'm still setting there dressed. I said, aren't you going to work? A few minutes. A few minutes. Drink some more coffee. I said, isn't there some cigarettes? Don't smoke. Why not? Carol said it forms gas on your stomach. I said, Carol's an idiot. Did you want to go outside? <laughs> 10 o'clock in the morning, here they come. What do you say, killer? Has he been mean to you, little lady? What are you doubling up your fist for? Because he says, if you talk too much, I'm going to belch you. No, she said, my husband has never struck me in all the years that we're married. I said, thank you, Mother. Charles? Joe? Who's the other idiot there? I said, I ought to grab you with a G.D. beard and drag you outside. He says, my name is Cliff. Well, I said, I don't care for you, Cliff, either. He says, I know that. We're not too happy with you. Back to the club we go. The next day, here they come again. And the next day, here they come again. I don't you fellas work? My wife says, why don't you shut up and listen to him?
Charlie says, "Now you're getting the idea, honey." "We'll trim this bird down to size here." 10 days pass. I recognize food for the first time. We're able and permitted, I might add, to go to the club every night unescorted. Just my darling and me. The romance of recovery in AA. I'm able to bathe unassisted. I removed the bird. All by myself. I put on my shorts with the right side to the front. I said to my darling, "Look, Ma. She said, "You're magnificent, Papa." I said, "Not everybody has to 10 days to do this." "Hello, Charlie. If I ever get a job, I'll buy you a pipe." "Oh, and speaking of a job, Bill, are you going to let this lady carry hash the rest of her life down there?" 30 days had passed. I said, "Do you think I'm ready?" Says, "You're as ready as you're ever going to be. Now get out and get a job." I got a job working for a fella that one time had worked for me. A nice man. A nice man. I got another suit. The coat matched the pants. In those days, that was important. Now, if it matches the pants, it doesn't mean anything. I paid the rent on the apartment, $42 a month. "Well, what do you think, kid?" "Really rolling, huh? How do you think I look?" "You look all right, dear. I don't know, but you're looking well. But just be calm." I said, no, I've got to get into action. My halo is killing me. I must write the Bill Green story. And to think how privileged I would become some 12, 13 years later to have Bill W. ask me to put my story in the big book. "Come off this stuff, Bill. I mean, come on now. You're doing well." And I became active. Oh, so active. Only my darling can tell you. The drunks in the bathtub. Drunks under the rug. Drunks in the bedroom. My daughter had to move out. I'm sober now. Say, Wendy, why don't you form a little group down there where you live? And so we did. There were 7 of us. And we formed the Clinton Hill Group in 1946. And 2 of them went out and got drunk. We got 4 more. And 3 of them got drunk.
And at the end of 3 months, we had 15 members. And they gave us a little pin at the end of the 3 month period back home. And I was waiting for the 3 month period. I could hardly contain myself. I had a 2,000 word script in my pocket. And we went to the meeting. I said, do you think they'll really give me the pin tonight? She said, they did it to everybody else at the end of 3 months. I don't know why you're any different. You've been working hard. What a wife I have, huh? They presented me with this pin and they said, Bill, say a few words. I said, I said, I'm an alcoholic and thank you very much. The applause was tremendous. I have since found out it was because I was so brief. I see by my watch it won't happen to me tonight. Six months rolls around. We get a second-hand car. I get a piece of jewelry out of pawn. We speak at a few meetings out in the hinterlands. In those days, you'd take two or three guys with you, and you'd be two or three guys out there, and you'd have a ball. And then something happened. I enjoyed the sound of the green tones. We didn't walk into the club anymore, we swept. I developed a little coterie of applauders. I learned to sit way in the back so I could make an impressive entrance when they asked me to speak. We went into the club this Sunday night, and the late jackass said to me, Bill, Tom didn't show up tonight. He said, would you mind filling in for him? He said, by God, I hate to ask you. And I know now that he did. And I said, what do you say, boy? I said, of course, old friend. I was the same dirty, stinking slob I'd been for 25 years. The only difference was I was sober now. I was dry as dust and just as useless. The only thing I developed was a callus on my fanny from sitting on those chairs. I knew more and more about less and less all the time. And they called on the first speaker. It wasn't me. I said, do you think they're saving me? I learned the most important lesson I've ever learned in AA that night. They called on the second speaker. Wasn't me either. And then Stoney spoke, and the meeting was over. Oh. I brought my harp to the party, and no one asked me to play. Oh, what happened? Nothing happened, Dad. They didn't need you tonight. Oh, yes. That's true. AA doesn't need Bill Green. I need you. I need you, boys and girls. I need you desperately, honestly, devotedly, sincerely. And I love every one of you. And I went back to the little group. And I learned that someone has to fold the chairs. Someone has to wash the ashtrays. I thought that Jeannie did it. My little darling in the kitchen, for 15 solid years, she made coffee and washed the dishes. And then I began to grow. Not all at once, just a little bit at a time. We stopped the mad rush. We stopped the running to a degree. And I learned to listen for the first time in many years. And you boys and girls taught me many things. And you taught me many phrases. You taught me, for the needs of tomorrow, I need not pray. Help me, keep me, love me, Lord, just for today. You boys and girls taught me, living is giving. Giving is loving, and loving is God. I worried about God. I didn't get anything from going to the Mass. My wife spoke to the late Monsignor McNulty about it. He said, "Don't worry, dear. One day he'll develop an awareness of God." Some 5 years passed in rapid succession. And the only thing I remember the first 5 years was my first anniversary when they forgot the cake. Gratitude is the theme. I was really cooking. And my wife said, "Why don't you be grateful for your years of sobriety?" As I was grateful then, so am I grateful now. We were still in the basement apartment. And right outside of our bedroom window, there was a 3-foot stunted oak with one branch that protruded at right angles. And this particular morning when I woke, do you know what I saw? One of the tiniest of God's feathered creatures sitting on that limb. You know what he was doing? He was taking a bath. He dipped his beak under his wings and ruffled his tiny body, and it caused the branch to rise and fall. An awareness of God. God made the bird and the little tree upon which it sat. And he made this all for me. I'd never seen a bird take a bath before. I'd spent 25 years in the bottom of a brown bottle. An awareness of God. I, too, learned to pray that morning. Tiny prayers, little prayers. Thanks, God, for a lovely day. And then one day, I was privileged to go out and tell the story of AA to somebody that needs it very badly. And you bring him into meetings
and you take him around, and you watch him grow big and strong like a Green Bay tree. You don't have to worry about God anymore. He's sitting right in front of your eyes. Try it sometime. Thanks for having me.